Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Steph, and this is episode 7 and the final one of the Motherhood series on the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. I'm recording this intro from a B&B again. I'm down in Gloucestershire at the Don't Buy Her Flowers warehouse. It's been a big week. We were on the telly. We were on Lorraine in the Mother's Day gift guide, which was awesome. Just really cool as a small business to reach that many people. I don't know how many viewers they have, but it will be in the millions. And orders went completely wild, which was amazing. Except it was at 9:30 at the exact same time that me and Doug were sitting on those teeny tiny little red chairs in the garden of Frank's nursery to watch a karate demonstration. And yeah, we just walked in the gate. I could see the team WhatsApp going wild. Lorraine was just starting the segment and we're watching Frank doing his karate chops, and he was so giddy to have us in his nursery. I think because of COVID, the parents can't go in. And he was so excited, and I did take a minute to go, bloody hell, my senses are in overdrive. Like, a business that I've been working on for 8 years is having a lovely moment, and it was really exciting, and the team are all excited and like, yeah, we're gonna do this with all the orders coming in. And at the same time, I'm watching my youngest just perform his little heart out with his very good, excellent chops. He got a certificate. I think that's where a lot of us spend a significant amount of time anyway, just in this overdrive, overwhelm. So it's just a classic example of it, really. So on to today's guest. It is the wonderful Em Smythe. So I wanted to speak to Em because we often hear limited versions of motherhood, and there are so many versions. Em became a mum after adopting her first daughter near the start of the pandemic and her second earlier this year. So she's two kids who are 2.5 and under, so quite full on. And as she says, there's so much misinformation around adoption, and I think a lot of secrecy, perhaps because of how and why adoption was done in the past. So she talks with me about their decision to adopt and the process, and also how she found becoming a parent alongside her husband. And it includes conversation around mum guilt and overwhelm, which are recurring themes that have come up in all of the conversations I've had. We also talk about her relationship with her body. So Em is a plus size model, and if you look at her Instagram, you'll see that she is gorgeous, often has her bum out, but also she looks gloriously confident, and she says it took some work for her to feel that way, and it's kind of an ongoing process. As I said, this is the last episode of this series, but I've already got some cracking guests lined up for the next series, including an illuminating conversation with Dr. Karen Gurney, aka the sex doctor. And she talks about sex and desire in long-term relationships. And what she says, I feel, could be invaluable to so many couples who feel like, well, that their sex life has kind of dwindled and is a bit over. It's a huge topic. But if you could subscribe on iTunes or follow on Spotify to this podcast, then you will be notified when that goes live. But for now, over to today's main event. I started by asking Em, how are you?
So, I have had better weeks, I will be completely honest with you. Just getting over the COVID, not ideal. And the COVID with two children was not quite what I thought it would be. It was much worse, infinitely worse.
Oh, man.
It's been a wild ride. But I'm sure a lot of other women will know that. I'm sure there's a lot of us who've been through that recently.
Yeah, but it's still a lot. Well, so what I, the reason I really wanted to talk to you, so we met a few years ago on a shoot that was my one and only stint at modelling.
Which is ridiculous because you were incredible.
No, no, no. So it's okay. I'm leaving that behind me. It's fine. But yeah, and so we met there, but I obviously then following you and seeing what you do, and then one kid popped up and then two kids popped up. So in you went into lockdown with no children and you've come out with two. And obviously I've learned through your posts and stuff that you've adopted. And I just really wanted to talk to you because obviously it's a different experience. So I suppose it's a bit about how it's different, how it's the same, but also it's not something that people know that much about. And I know you've said that there's loads of misinformation around adoption.
There is, yeah.
That's what I really wanted to talk to you about. And also just your journey to motherhood and what made you adopt and all that stuff.
Well, tell you what then, let's start from the moment that we met, because that actually, it has been a wild ride since then. I can remember vividly sitting down with you, and I was actually going through a bit of turmoil at the time myself, just trying to decide whether I wanted to have children, whether I wanted to be a mother. And I think that's one of the big things about me, is not necessarily whether I want to do something, but the identity that goes with that, which is wild. And I was the same when it came to marriage. Did I want to be a wife? Did I want to be a mother? And a lot of that comes down to the ideas that I myself have put on those two roles. And I can remember sitting down and talking with you and listening to you talk, and you are so beautifully honest about motherhood, about how well, you didn't put me off, okay, so good, that's something.
Good, yeah.
But you were so honest about what it is, and also how that is in terms of an identity, and how you maintain your own identity. And I can remember you talking about rushing back to work, and how we kind of, in a way, we are often pushed to be the person who has everything. And I sat and I thought, I haven't really thought about it that way before. I thought that was my decision, but actually, is it coming at me from every angle that I should be doing everything, or I should be doing nothing? There's no in between. So there were quite a lot of conversations, a lot of soul searching around that time, around what I wanted to do, because in the past I had losses, as a lot of women have. And I think for a lot of women, when you lose a child, it opens up conversations in your head. But for me, the conversations I was having in my head weren't all the ones that I'd read about in magazines and on the internet and in books. I didn't feel like a grieving mother. I felt like, gosh, this isn't just a thing that happens. I actually have to take some active decisions in this. It may be something that I can't do naturally. And I say that in inverted commas, because there's nothing more natural than adoption in a sense, but maybe biologically I can't have children. I have to make that decision now. Do I potentially spend the next few years of my life, potentially, you know, 10, 20 years, looking into IVF, looking into all that kind of thing, or what are my options? And I realized then that as women, we do not talk about what our options are. We do quite a lot of this alone. We decide, it's like I say, all or nothing. So obviously my husband was involved in this as well. It wasn't just conversations I was having with myself. I mean, it was mostly conversations I was having with myself, but I did involve him in the conversations. And we decided to just put the conversation aside, because we love our life. We love it now. We loved it then. And I know you understand that as well, because you're a big lover of life, embracing whatever stage you're in at the time.
Well, and you love each other as well. That's probably worth pointing out. I can tell you've posted a few things where you've really talked about your relationship and what you've learned about from being with your husband, about yourself, about how you are not half of a couple. You are a whole, and he is a whole, and then you've come together. So I think that is plays a big part as well, because you've got to be pretty solid to have children. And I think you've got to be pretty solid to go down the route that you did as well.
Oh my goodness, yes. And I'm a big believer in always thinking of the worst case scenario. So you could be in a relationship that seems like a dream relationship, but when the bad times come, and they do happen, are you still going to be as strong? And I knew that having children wasn't going to be a bad time as such, but it was going to be a hard time. And I knew that we we're strong enough to take whatever is thrown at us. And you're right, we're not two halves. We're two separate people. And we're very, very, very different people. I'm just a big squishy softy. You know, I'm basically a jellyfish in both appearance and mentality. But he's very pragmatic. He will tend to think about the negatives rather than the positives. So we had a lot of soul searching between us. And this is going to sound absolutely bonkers, but one day I just thought, I wonder what adoption's like. And my dad was adopted. And I started thinking about it, and something inside of me just kind of clicked. And I don't know what it was, but it just said, yeah, this is the right route for you. This takes away the worries you have. This brings additional joy that you weren't thinking about before. And it wasn't that we just then went and adopted, because flipping heck, it's a process that I'm more than happy to talk you through, but it was more of a, let's have a look into this. This is an option. Let's look at the options. And so I went to an adoption open evening with my husband, and I just kind of, from that moment, I thought, this is just the thing for me. And I can't describe
it. It's so interesting that you just had this feeling.
Oh my gosh, just an epiphany. And something that I'm very frank about is that adoption is not like a crazy hippy dippy, oh, look, aren't we doing something wonderful and good here? It's not. You have got to be selfish in it as well. It's not just about, I mean, oh gosh, you speak to people, and you did ask me, what are the things that you wish people would stop doing or not say?
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, the teary-eyed look on people's faces when they go, you're just doing something so beautiful. It's like, nah, trust me, it ain't beautiful. Nothing beautiful about this.
That's so interesting. So I'm one of six, and my mum and dad fostered and adopted. So I grew up with it. I think the whole process has changed quite a lot. I think you probably are checked out a bit more than they used to, by the paperwork and stuff.
So they
had four of us biologically, and then they fostered and adopted, and we had short-term fostering, long-term fostering, and then I ended up with another brother and sister, you know, who are my brother and sister and long-term. But mum will say that she gets that all the time, like people saying, gosh, what a wonderful person you must be. And it makes her really cross. In fact, you're probably quite similar in ways. She makes her really cross, and she's like, you either have it in you or you don't. It's not just because you're a do-gooder.
Oh my gosh, because I'm not.
But it sounds as if it was almost something clicked, and it was like, I could do that. That's my way. That's how I'm going to be a mum.
Yeah, 100%. And the other thing, you get a lot of people saying, oh, I thought about adopting.
Because they want you to think they're a good person.
Exactly, but it's got goodness. There is no morality in adopting. Mm. We wanted children, and there were these incredible children that were just meant for us, and it doesn't erase any of their identity prior to coming to us. And one came to us in 2 years ago, mid-pandemic, times. And the other little girl's been with us for 2 months now.
And how old are they?
So one is 2.5, the other one is 1.
Mate.
And so I know, okay. I would not recommend this.
Full on, okay.
Yes. But they're gorgeous. You know, they're just absolutely wonderful. There's nothing hippy dippy about it. There's nothing romantic about it. It was meant to be. So I think, you know, when we're talking about adoption, about making the decision to adopt, you can't go into it with these sort of heart shaped glasses and love hearts floating around in the sky, and it's going to be magical and wonderful, because it is still parenthood.
Yeah.
I'm still a mum, and my children can still be monsters at times. They're mostly incredible, and I'm very, very lucky. Gratitude comes a long way into it, because I do feel gratitude every day. Mm. But it's not romantic. I don't know how to get that into people's heads.
No, and I guess maybe there are some people who go into it with the view of like, maybe they've had some kids and they want to help some more, or they've gone into, I don't know. I suppose there are different routes in. But it's not always necessary that someone is some heroic figure that's doing it for the good of just other people. I think that's a funny one. The other thing you said about it as well is about, I was listening to your live, and you were saying about you can't have an ego, especially when it comes to like their biological family. And I thought that was really interesting, because I think that's something that people would just find the concept of quite hard.
Yeah. Now I've always been quite good at sharing. So I am quite laid back in a lot of, in a sense. That doesn't stop me giving every single part of me to my girls. Mm. So I don't hold anything back from them thinking, oh, they're not mine, because they are, they're my daughters. Mm. But they existed before I came along. Mm. And they were going to exist whether I came along or not. And there's a lot of different backgrounds that a child could come from. And some of them are incredibly hard to hear about, incredibly sad. Yeah. And because they are, because we have hearts, and it'd be wrong if we didn't find them hard and sad, because these are children at the end of the day. But there's also just, there's times when their parents couldn't have them. They're just not ready for children. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that there's a horror story or a bad story. It's not sad. It's just, I kind of see it as working as a team. And I know that sounds really silly, but I didn't bring them into the world. Somebody else did. Mm. I have been in contact with them. I think incredibly highly of them. There's so much, so, so much love in both directions. But you can't have an ego, because these people existed, you know, they were going to exist whether you were there or not.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's this sort of nature nurture thing as well. They bring little bits of what made them with them for you to enjoy and love.
Yeah. One of my brothers, his biological dad was at his wedding, as were my parents. And I can remember just thinking, God, that's massive, like for everyone involved. Yeah. But that's what he wanted. And they were really okay with it. Because they've each played a role.
Yeah.
They have different roles. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think for me, that would be the dream, because it would mean that we've got something right.
Mm.
Because part of our future is going to be explaining to our girls where they've come from and helping them to understand that, yeah, there might be some negatives, but overall it's incredibly positive.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be ashamed of anything. I don't want there to be any secrets. And that's something that's really changed over the years. When my dad was adopted, he wasn't told until he was quite a bit older.
Yeah.
And it was kept as a secret. It was the family secret. And what that must do to a child's, to their ego and to their sense of self is just insane.
You're so right, actually. I can think of a few people I know as adults who have still got a lot going on where, and this isn't in my family, like people I've met along the way, where it was secrecy and then they don't quite know where they came from. So
yeah,
what a gift that you can do both, basically.
And I really do hope so. And social services have a really big part to play in that as well.
Mm.
One of the things we were told in our training was that you need to be ready to advocate for your children. And one of the first examples of that has been advocating for them with social services, because we know how much pressure they're under now more than ever. Mm. When you think about what's happened during COVID, when you think about domestic violence rates and that type of thing, social services are under more pressure than ever, and you have to be kind of ready to push and move things along.
Yeah.
If needs be. We have the most incredible social workers involved, just phenomenal women who, I don't know how they do what they do, because it's incredible.
It's a tough job.
It is a tough job, and to have them supporting us has been magic. But there are times when you have to push things along yourself. And I think that's going to be a bit of a story for the future, as it is for all mums. You have to advocate for your children, but I think particularly with children who have been looked after children, there's just more opportunities for them to slip through the gaps with certain things. And well, I'm not having it, and I think a lot of people in my shoes feel the same way. Mm.
Without going into like all of the process, because that would take up the whole podcast. You step forward and say, we would like to look into adoption. How long is that process, and what's the process of finding a child?
It's very much how long is a piece of string. We, at the beginning, we went to the open night, and then we kind of sat back a bit and had a lot of time to think. You then go into different phases of the adoption process. And the first part is more kind of fact-finding. People will come in and meet you at your house. Social workers come round. They'll find out about your relationship. You are asked questions that you've never thought about before. Mm. And I found that bit really hard. I think that was probably the most challenging part of the adoption process leading up to our daughter's
coming home.
Questions
about you as a couple, or questions about you as an individual?
Yeah. Both.
Right.
Both. And questions about your opinions and things and views on things. And as I said before, my husband and I are very different. Right. And we're very lucky that we have a social worker who got him quite early on. I could give you a good example of one of the things he said was, they ask, would you like a girl or a boy? I mean, what... Who can answer that question just straight off? It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and also when whatever you end up with generally, then you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So my husband's response though was, I only want girls because boys grow up to be serial killers.
Not yours though, because you're trying to adopt them. Whoops.
All boys, all of them, every last one. And this was his comment to the social worker. And I've never in my life wanted to, like, I don't know, become a serial killer myself. Just to rid myself of him out of my view. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he was too far away for me to kick. And I was just like, oh, you're so funny. And I'm like, when she's gone, you are done for, mate. It was a difficult time. Things like that where I was just like, I can't believe.
Well, and you couldn't possibly, I guess you couldn't rehearse all the questions because you didn't know what they're going to ask. So
no, and nor should you. No. Nor should you, because these questions are to find out how you feel and to get you to understand how you feel about things as well. That was his most memorable moment. But there were quite a few. And on the training, one day after training, because at the end of phase one, you go to, you have a couple of weeks of training, which is really useful. I do not like learning things. I stopped learning at school. I'm rubbish. I can't sit in a classroom environment. I'm just like away with the fairies. But it was really, really interesting. We learned a lot about the psychology of children and about how trauma can impact family life. And it was really, really useful. But the things he came out with there, I just... It's a wonder he's still free, never mind has children. He's just off his rocker most of the time. So I found that hard because we were finding things out about each other as well. And they weren't always things that we agreed on. And I found it very difficult because you can't shape somebody else's opinion. Why would you want to? I married him because I love him. Why would I want to change him? But there were a lot of views that were different. But it was good because going through that process got us to discuss things that we'd never thought about before.
And we didn't have that process. We just, a baby turns up and you kind of go, shit, we haven't discussed all this stuff. So actually, exactly, it's probably something that you could do with more people who are having kids.
Possibly. But then it does, at the same time, that forces you to overthink every single element.
Yeah.
And overthinking is probably something you shouldn't do when you're going to have a child, because you're exhausting yourself before you've even had the opportunity to actually be exhausted.
Well, and I suppose you're doing it without the kid there who could be, they'll all be different anyway. You can't actually plan.
Exactly. For, And there was a lot of that as well. In 5 years' time, what do you think you'll be doing?
Right.
In the future, what happens if your child, if this happens, what happens if this happens? And those are difficult questions to answer. And particularly if you're quite a laid back person who just takes life as it comes, they're difficult things to get your head around. So that's the first part. And then, as I say, you've got the training, and then it comes into the family finding, and that's where children are matched with parents. We were so fortunate, and I've heard from people who it's taken years, but we were incredibly fortunate that the day before we went to panel, which is where you have a group of both peers and professionals who will ask you questions. They look through all the paperwork that's been produced during the adoption process, and they decide whether they feel that you are suitable to adopt. And the day before that, we were sent through a profile of a little girl who is now our oldest daughter, and our social worker said, it feels a bit early. It feels a bit soon. I don't want to put you off. I was in two minds about sending you this, but there's just something about it. And I read through the profile, and she was just the dream. I mean, it's very difficult because it feels like you're shopping for a baby, and that's not a nice, it's not a nice feeling at all. It's an unpleasant feeling because...
Well, if you go, not that one, that probably feels a bit...
Exactly. And there are elements of that. So we, like I say, we were lucky. And then the day of panel, we were told that we'd been sort of shortlisted to the last two, and that's weird in itself as well.
I know.
And we were just trying to be really laid back and chilled about it all. And then the next day we were told, if you'd like to come and meet her... And I know it really is difficult. And I think we were lucky in that sense that we were matched, whereas in some situations, there's a magazine, there's a website. It's a bit like Tinder.
Yeah, like,
but with babies, and it's not nice. It's not a nice feeling.
Mm. What was that first meeting like?
Oh gosh, it was intense. It was really intense.
Because how old was she at that point?
So she was 10 months.
Oh,
10 months. And I know it was intense. She was beautiful. There was no doubt about that. But what can you really tell about a 10-month-old? Mm. Sorry, other than how they look. I wanted to meet her, but I didn't really know what we were meant to do. Mm. You know,
is she supposed to like? Put her arms out.
Are we checking for oil levels or what are we doing? Really... How many miles are on
and
her?
Also, presumably you hadn't had loads of experience around kids that age. So
no.
Yeah.
No, but it was, we walked in to meet the foster parents who, again, oh, now they're the incredible people that we can get teary-eyed over, from my opinion, because they are doing something phenomenal. They're giving children the first taste of what a guardian, what a carer can look like.
For
a lot of children. And that's getting them off to the start in life that they deserve. And both our girls came through the same foster parents.
Right.
And to me, they're going to be part of our life forever. They're like aunties and uncles. And they're like, they've shaped the early months of our girls' lives. So, we went to meet them and we just kind of sat there and played and,
pressure. Did you feel a pressure that,
oh,
don't cry, is everything, like you do if you're spending time with a kid for the first time.
Well, you were told on the training, don't cry because it'll scare the kids, and I was like, oh no, now I'm terrified that I'm gonna cry, and then if I cry then I'll cry more because I'm crying, and I know I shouldn't be crying, and oh no. But I kind of put a bit of my heart away, I think. I kind of shut off a bit of my brain that day, because I was like, just don't get attached, because somebody will ring you the next day and say,
I was gonna say, did you know at that point that was your daughter, or had they not completely confirmed it yet?
Not completely confirmed. Anything could happen at that point. But when I walked out the door, I knew. I couldn't say it to my husband because I knew he'd be like, oh gosh, oh, you're gonna all stop it. This is it now. But I just sat there and I said to myself, that's my daughter. That is my daughter.
And then how long before she came to live with you?
It was a couple of months. It's a bit like a transition period where you go and stay over in the area where your child's from, and you get to know them in a really sort of joined up way with the foster parents as well. So it's not like, here you go, here's your child, see you later. And she came home, and then all of a sudden we had just been two very kind of lazy laid back adults in a house by ourselves, and then there was a 10-month-old there who was teething and who'd learnt to crawl 5 days earlier. And he just had gone through one of the biggest traumas of their lives off the back of a previous trauma. And it was really, really hard. I can't lie. I think it was the most challenging thing we've ever done. And definitely, I'm sure if she could tell us it was the most challenging thing she's ever done as well. And that's when it comes to the point where you start to get a bit soppy about it, because you just think, flipping out, what's this kid going through? What can we do to try and make this life perfect for her? And I think that's perhaps something that a lot of adopted parents have said, that there's mother guilt. Mother guilt is just a thing that everyone has. All mums have. It's horrible. Nobody warned me about how bad it was. It is intense. But when you've adopted, you've also got that, oh my gosh, am I doing enough? My sister actually said to me quite recently, she said, you sometimes tend to mother with guilt. And I thought, that's something I was feeling, but I didn't know it was something people were seeing. And I found that really interesting. And I don't know if it means that I'm doing it better or worse. Not that I think there is a good, you know, there's no right way of mothering.
Everything you've just described about how hard that first bit is and the mum guilt are things that a mum feels. Like,
yeah.
So, I guess it was overnight that you then have a child in your house and you have a daughter. Like, that's big. Did you find it harder than you were expecting to find it?
So much harder. I've never in my life felt so alone, so isolated, so incapable as well.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365 day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm someone who, when I find something difficult or when something's going badly, I fix it. So I'm lonely. I'll go find some friends then. Couldn't do any of those things. And I know that a lot of my friends, even without children, were feeling the same things. Everything felt very, very out of control. I also discovered that I do not do routine. I can't do routine. Right. It sends me insane. Right. It absolutely sends me insane. It, like, I get a headache just thinking about routine. But obviously that year, all there was routine, yeah, wasn't there? That's all we could do. We got up at the same time. We did the same things every day. We went for our silly little walks, for our silly little mental health. Yeah. And these were the things that we just did. And it was, I saw my future stretching ahead of me and I was terrified because I didn't even have work to break it up.
And to give you that feedback, like when you, I think for anyone when they've had a baby, when you then go back to work, that there's something about that familiarity. If you go back to your old job, you're like, I know how to do this. When you've spent the last however many months just feeling like you've got no idea.
Not a clue. Yeah. And I don't think any knew. If there's a mum out there who knows what they're doing, I would love to meet them because I don't have a clue. And in a way, I don't want to know because I actually quite like just freestyling it and hoping for the best. It's what works for us as a family. And that was without a doubt the most challenging time of my life. So there was an element that when it came to adoption number two, that I panicked.
Okay, yeah.
I thought, is this going to be the same? Am I going to be lonely and not know what I'm doing and feel like I'm constantly ruining my child's life? Yeah. Or is it going to be different? And I'm very, very, very pleased to say it's incredibly different.
Because you've done it before. Like there's no way that first time that you can know. Like, and even if you've been around all the kids in the world, you still can't know how to do it.
No, don't get me wrong. People reached out to me, but I really isolated myself. And I think it's because I didn't want any help. I wanted to do it myself and I wanted to get it right. But at the same time, I felt I couldn't. And I remember standing in the living room and just looking at the wall and just thinking, what am I going to do? What's going to happen? What will become of us? And there was all the general COVID anxiety as well of not knowing what this virus was, not knowing how it was going to impact us, worrying about not being able to get nappies, worrying about not being able to get formula. It was probably the most anxious I've ever been in my life. But it did end. It came to an end. And I don't feel any of us are any worse off. It was, I think it was quite difficult taking her to nursery for the first time because I thought, she doesn't know what to do with children. Like, what do they do? But then I learned that children don't play together anyway. They just sort of play next to each other.
About three or four, then they start to actually, but before that, they just snatch stuff and say, mine a lot.
Yeah. yeah, exactly that. So she was very happy going off and just standing next to other children for a high price. But she, it was a tricky time. But I just kept reminding myself it was no worse than what other new mums were going through.
It all sounds really familiar. So it's
and
I mean, I can't imagine doing it in lockdown. But then I think some of what you said about that you're like, well, I need to work this out by myself, and closing yourself off, I think again is really common. It took me to my third, to which I think when you mentioned our conversation when we met, I think Frank was one. So I was just going through it, and that was such a difference because I accepted all the help. I actively got all the help, but I didn't do that with my first two at all. And it was easier when I did do that, for sure.
I do wish that the first time round I'd perhaps been a bit more laid back, but at the same time, I'm giving myself a break on it because I can't see how I possibly could have been. You put me in that scenario again and I'll probably behave exactly the same way.
Oh, and it's massive. And I saw you've posted about holidays. You posted things like, why did no one tell me about holidays with kids? Because until your first holiday with your child, you've been having a lovely time with your lovely husband. And then it's like,
oh my God,
oh shit.
All we did was eat and drink and sleep and sit in the sunshine, sort of like move between the sunshine and the air conditioner and just, you know, late nights and late mornings.
I promise it gets better. It's that first couple. It's that first one, especially one of my mates. I remember saying, I think they went to France and they drove so they could take all their baby shit. And she said she sobbed the whole drive home. and her husband was sitting next to her going, oh God, oh shit. And she was like, I was just mourning what used to be.
Life, joy, happiness.
And I think the thing that, the reason we sometimes don't talk about it, or we give ourselves a really hard time about it, or we say life's great, everything's great, is because we feel like we're supposed to be so grateful, and that in saying that we're saying we don't want the kid, and that's not it. It's just there's such an adjustment that you need.
We're just very tired.
We're so tired, but you need to be able to say,
yeah, of course,
because a holiday is entirely different with kids. But I can remember we went away when the kids were maybe 3 and 5 or something like that, and Doug came home and cried because it had been a holiday.
That's what I need. I look back on it with really happy memories.
Yeah, always.
Which isn't that a brain clever to do that? It's called repression, isn't it, really? But I look back on it with, I look back and think of all the wonderful things we did, the times when she wasn't screaming. But what I would give as tips to mums taking their children away for their first holiday, if you go to a shop and there's a unicorn in there that you put batteries in and it repeats everything that your child says, do not buy that on day one of your holiday. It's a bad move. Just don't do it. Think sensibly. Learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
And the unicorn's still going strong as well, which is just constantly, it's still going strong. My husband put rechargeable batteries in it.
Oh God. Oh, but you've talked about, you are a model. And if anyone wants to go and look at your Instagram feed, they'll see a beautiful peachy bum, because there's quite a lot of underwear. There's not that many when you've got clothes on. But you said that so obviously fashion's really important, but you said that you lost all sense of style after having kids. You're like, well, I don't know what to wear.
Oh my gosh, yeah. There's two elements. There's the kind of practical element of you need to be able to move a bit quicker and sort of do a lot more bending down, which is not, in your late 30s, you start to lose that ability anyway. And you need to do more bending down and picking things up and wiping things, and everything gets snot on it, everything. So there's an element of that, but there's also an element of, what am I getting dressed up for? I've got all these beautiful clothes and I get really excited about putting them on. And then I put them on and I'm just going to Sainsbury's. Do I waste this on the good people of Sainsbury's?
I mean, I wanted to burn everything that I'd worn on maternity leave. I think I wanted to burn because I just felt shapeless and it's just not your normal. It's not your normal clothes. It's not the stuff that makes you feel
it's
good.
It's not who you are.
No,
exactly. And I think my sister, she has her maternity wardrobe that was quite easy for her to switch between because she had a bump. So she had to get new clothes for the bump. And then when the bump's gone, she goes back into her other clothes. And that seemed to make sense. But for me, I don't really have a start and end of when my style left me and when it may come back. The other thing this year is I've decided to not buy as many clothes because it was just getting utterly ridiculous how many clothes I had for somebody who never goes anywhere. So I'm trying to be a bit more sustainable. And the issue with that then is that there's Vinted, which is just incredible. I don't know if you've ever bought anything from Vinted. It's like the best thing since sliced bread. But now I've got a whole wardrobe of secondhand clothes, which are still clothes that I don't need.
Ethically, you can feel good, but you don't need them.
And it's not helping me stylistically because none of them go with anything else I've got in my wardrobe. So then I'm like, well, I'm going to have to get a pair of trousers to go with those. And flares seem to be in fashion, so I'll get some flares. But where am I going to wear flares? Because I live in a little town in the north of England where if I put the, like, you know, fluorescent flares on that everyone else is wearing, they're going to be like, what are you doing?
I say go for it. I say do it.
Your cat died. Yeah. What's happening? So, I lost it. But actually, I feel like I can find it again. I'm going out on Saturday and I'm feeling incredibly positive about the fact that I'm going to wear a frock that's clean, washed, no snot on it. So I think I can get it back. I'm feeling all right
about
that.
And what about your relationship with your body? Because you've talked about that in the past as well and how that's changed. So how tall are you?
I'm 6 foot and a size 18,
And can I just say as well, also have amazing red hair, often coiffured into some sort of beehive-y shape or bit of height. There's a lot of Christina Hendricks in Mad Men going on for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. I think having daughters, for a lot of people I know who have daughters, they really have to change their relationship with their body because they realise the impact that could have on their children. Talking about diets and constant exercise and all this kind of thing. But I found that quite easy because I threw all that talk away years ago. I find it quite challenging sometimes, the things that people say to my daughters, particularly when it comes to eating. And I don't think they realize they're doing it. So it's like things like good food, bad food. Yeah. Food doesn't have morality. Food is food. You eat food to fuel your body. You can enjoy food as well. It's food. So my relationship with my body perhaps hasn't really changed very much. And other than I have less time to think about it. So I have less time to either admire or occasionally dislike what I see. But I definitely am more conscious of the world around me, I think, because I shut it off to myself a long time ago.
And how did you do that? How did you shut it off? What was the... Was there a moment?
I was just exhausted, you know. Yeah. I was just exhausted of thinking about it. It was just, I thought about how I looked all night, all day, how I looked wrong in some way. And I think surrounding myself by positive reinforcement, Instagram was really good for that. Sometimes changing the people I surrounded myself by as well, because I had friends who all we would talk about was what we'd eaten that day and what we were going to do to lose weight and what we were going to do to improve ourselves. And again, that's in inverted commas, because it's silly to think that you're improving yourself by changing your appearance.
Shrinking yourself. You're not.
It's silly. So that for me was a big thing, was just surrounding myself by positive influences, kind of getting into a bit of an echo chamber, but it was like a safe echo chamber where it got me feeling comfortable, so that when I came out of it, I was like, look, you can't knock me. I actually like myself. I appreciate how I look. And also, there's a lot to be said for body neutrality. And I'm fortunate that I can, because of my size, being a size 18, I'm towards the small end of plus size. I can be quite neutral about my appearance. I don't have to think about it all the time. I can forget about it. For larger women, it's not that easy because we're reminded, whether it be by healthcare or whether it be by society, magazines, that there is definitely a good body, bad body rhetoric that you can't get away from. But I've found taking a bit of a body neutral approach has helped me. And it frees up a lot of time in your head to do other things, like 15 loads of washing or hoovering or
picking up raisins. The headspace thing is massive. And I think I've struggled a bit with the body positivity stuff. Because, well, first of all, quite often it's fronted by someone who's like a size 12. But also it still means you're thinking about your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's what body neutrality is about, right? So, and also even things like intuitive eating or healthy eating, it's like you're still having to really think about. And if you're someone, if you're someone who has had an eating disorder like I have, then it still perpetuates that.
There's still an element of control around it, and that's kind of what we have. Sorry, I shouldn't say that we have to leave behind, because it works for some people. Mm. Everybody's different. Mm. That's the important thing to remember, is that this intuitive eating, it might work for some people who haven't got disordered eating. It might be for them the absolute dream. Yeah. But for those of us who do have an element of disordered eating, actually what we want to be able to do is just not think about food all day long, but to eat and to enjoy it, but also to just sometimes eat because we need to, without having to apply any rules or control or morality to what we're doing, to just be. Because there are people out there, I find it wild that my husband can just, sometimes he just eats, like he doesn't think about it. Sometimes he doesn't, like sometimes he doesn't have a meal and it doesn't matter to him.
Doug's
not eating.
Same.
I'm like, really? How can you do that?
He's like, well, food is fuel, and if I'm hungry, I eat it, and sometimes my body goes up a bit and sometimes it goes down a bit. It's just, he's so clear on it, whatever his parents or his upbringing or whatever has done, he has such a clear, healthy attitude to it.
Yeah, but that takes some doing, and everybody is different with that. And
so I wanted to come on to talk to you about overwhelm and obviously this kind of rush hour. So one of the other things I saw you post about was about the idea of having it all, and everyone's version of that being different, and I wondered if you could just talk about that a bit.
I think we're kind of ingrained to think that as a woman and as a mother, having it all is working, having a child, having a clean house, having all these things, you know, having a social life, going out, all these things, which that's not what everybody wants for a start. I loved what my life was like before children, but having children has fitted in really nicely, and some of the things have gone out the window, but I don't miss them so much. Some of them I do miss. And I think this kind of having it all is what is it? What is it all? What does it mean? How do we have it? And do we need to put pressure on ourselves to have it? Because I absolutely don't want to. I find being a working mum hard at times. And for me, a lot of that comes from the mum guilt.
Yeah.
And actually, my employer is a fantastic employer who makes life incredibly easy for me, and they really support work-life balance. But there's still times when I'll be in a meeting with colleagues whose children are off from nursery sick. My children are off from nursery sick, but they're okay because their wives are worrying about them, whereas I'm the one worrying about them. And sometimes that feels incredibly unjust. Mm-hmm. And I just think I could be performing a lot better if I wasn't worrying about my child. I could be a much better mother if I wasn't worrying about work. But there's balance. There's balance because I know I enjoy working. I know that I love going to work. I love doing my job. It just makes me feel so fulfilled, because there's not many small achievable goals in mothering. You said it earlier, you know where you are with work, and I appreciate that. So I think there's a balance. I do find it overwhelming. I really, really miss my independence. I miss when somebody says to me, do you want to do this? I used to just say yes.
Spontaneity.
Because I could. Yeah. But that doesn't outweigh the joy I get from having my
and
children.
And there's strength in being able to say, I miss elements of my old life, and I love my kids.
Exactly. And it seems like having it all means you're not complaining about anything.
Enjoying it all. Well, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
No. Before having children, I used to regularly say to my husband, if I die now, I die very, very happy. I've done everything I wanted to do. And that was before having children. And I feel like you don't have to miss something to want to add it onto your life. And I know that had we not had children, I would still have been incredibly happy. I wouldn't have felt like I'd missed out on anything, because that would have been my choice to make. You just have to, and this comes back to what I was saying about options. You have to know what your options are. You have to be able to make informed decisions about your own life. You need to think about what you actually want, not about what people are telling you should want.
I've had two guests, so Annie Mack and also Sarah Guanyoma, two women who've both said that they had a point in their lives where they looked at what success was for them. And it involved looking at what they've currently got and working out what do they like about their life, or what is there anything that they do want to change. And I just think it's something that we don't do very often. But the main point is that it's personal to the person.
Yeah. I feel incredibly successful right now because I've got through a pandemic with a new baby. Yes. I feel really, really, really proud of that. If you'd have asked me at the time, I wouldn't have done. And I feel successful because my children generally are happy and safe, and I'm happy and I'm safe and I'm protected, and I've surrounded myself by people that I just love and who love me and who care about me. And what could be more successful than that?
And you've talked a bit online about sort of, well, feeling tired, which is completely understandable with the phase that you're at, but and also a sort of anxious and about feeling too much. How does that overwhelm come out in you?
I reach a point where I'll feel very tearful and I'll feel very over emotional and I'll feel like everything is insurmountable. And I know that that's not me, because I like to take things piece by piece and manage them. And when everything feels unmanageable, that's when I know that I have become incredibly overwhelmed. And I actually, just before going off on adoption leave this time, I made a list of all the things that were overwhelming me. And I'd had a really good conversation with my friend who lives a very different life to mine. But we were both saying that this past couple of years, the feeling of being overwhelmed has hit us both really, really hard, more than anything else ever has. And I made a list of all the things that were overwhelming me, and I put it to a side, and I actually looked at it the other day and I thought, I can't believe I was worried about that. But at the time, it was just all encompassing.
You're so accurate with all the things that individually normally you completely handle. When you hit that point, all of them feel impossible, or, oh, this was a terrible choice, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
It's a horrible feeling.
I think for me, recognising my own mental health is a big thing, and knowing when to speak to the doctor is a big thing. So if it may be that I need a bit of help, I now know to ask for that. That was quite hard in 2020 because it felt like everybody needed help, and who was I to be asking for help? But it's something that I am now infinitely better at, asking for help. A therapist is just, I'm so fortunate that I've been in the position to be able to have a therapist in the past, and that's been mega. But again, I think sometimes when you're overwhelmed, you're so deep in it, you can't get out to ask for the help, can you?
If you're like, I could probably do a talking to someone, but just that thing of going and finding someone to talk to, booking an appointment, that feels too much, doesn't it?
It's massive. Yeah. That's why I think when we talk about what success looks like and what having it all looks like, is about breaking your life into little chunks and saying, I picked up the phone today to speak to the doctor, or I made an appointment, or I told my friend that I was feeling low, or I was feeling overwhelmed. I'm going to speak to a doctor. That's huge for me. Telling my friends when I'm overwhelmed is the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. Telling my family, and it's well known in my family that when I go quiet, there's something up. So if people can't get a hold of me, there's something wrong, because I don't talk about it. And the overwhelm, it can get as good and proper. I know that I'm snappier when I'm overwhelmed, because I'm not a snappy person. I'm not angry. I don't get stroppy. I'm not grumpy. I mean, I'm painting myself here to be a pretty perfect person, aren't I?
I'm probably quite similar, that it comes out snappy, mostly aimed at Doug. But then that probably is also a reflection of your relationship, in that you really, you know, it's solid enough to take it. I mean, that's what I'm telling myself and him. So
it's two way as well, isn't it? I'm sure Doug can sometimes be a pain in the backside.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in fact, I know he is. I've read about it.
I could start a list, but that's not what this podcast is about. Actually, I've got one for you. So Mother's Day's coming. So having done what you've done in the last couple of years, I'm sure you're hoping for something great. But just to let you know that a few years ago, Mother's Day, I'd been saying to Doug for about 3 weeks, like, you know, Mother's Day is quite popular. People will take their mum or partner out for dinner or for lunch, so you need to book somewhere. And he was like, yeah, just kept dismissing me. And then we got to the morning of Mother's Day, and I was like, okay, so where are we going? And he's like, we've got a table at 11:30 at Pizza Express. It's like, nobody wants pizza at 11:30, but also, I know you did this at the last minute. I know that you waited, even though I've been waiting. So what are you hoping for?
Oh, I would give my right arm for a massage. Oh. That is what I would, that's all I want. But I actually really want to spend Mother's Day with the wider family. Mm. Yeah, what I'd like for Mother's Day is for my husband to clear up after everybody's had a curry at our house.
Perfect.
That would be really nice.
I'm going to send this to him. We'll make sure that that...
If you could, yeah. And if he could load the dishwasher and unload it
without
as well.
You having to mention that the dishwasher needs loading and unloading.
Without me having to actually load it and unload it. Would be ideal.
Okay. That's not too much to ask.
No, you think no. Not,
oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Em. It's fascinating, I think, and also there's so many parallels that just kind of, regardless of how you come to become a mother, there's going to be things that are challenges or things that feel amazing. And I just think there's just so, like you said, there's so much misinformation about adoption that it's just really lovely to speak to you and hear how it was for you.
Well, thank you, Steph. And regarding the misinformation, speak to your local authority. If anybody's interested in adoption, go and speak to your local authority or your local adoption agency, and they will tell you everything you need to know. Don't make any assumptions. It's been really nice to talk about adoption. So thank you.
Huge thank you to Em, who was just such an easy, wonderful guest to speak to. As I speak, we are number 4 in the kids and family category of the Apple podcast chart, which feels amazing. I know the charts change all the time and it's probably very fleeting, but I'm going to take it. I've got a picture of it, so that happened now. And if you've enjoyed any of our episodes, I'd be so grateful if you could rate, review and subscribe to the podcast, share it on your socials, tell your mates, all of that stuff. And obviously, I think we've got 16 episodes. So if you haven't listened to all of them, you can go back. There's plenty there. And then we'll be back in about a month or so. And I've got a family holiday coming up, which I'm a bit delirious about. I'm just really bloody hoping it happens because so much has been cancelled in the last couple of years. So I hope everyone is okay. I hope you have a good few weeks. Stop and breathe when you can. And thank you so much for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.